From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
I will chop off your head.
I too shall also chop your head such that it is severed from your body. I am Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Tonight, it is
March
3rd, 2011.
And this is show number
108.
And the reason neither of those sounded anything like the rest of the recording is because this is a special edition of the Paul and Storm podcast.
We are very proud to have with us tonight Ethan Nicole, a special guest who we are not going to exactly interview, but chat with some.
Yes. and we're recording this interview now, and we have no idea when we're going to air it. Probably some week that we either can't or don't feel like doing the regular podcast. So this one's going in the vault.
We're holding it until he becomes like a big movie star, and then it'll be like the lost Eve tapes. And
yeah, it'll be like those BBC Beatles, early Beatles recordings where they're dicking around and you know playing Bill Haley and the Comets songs and stuff.
But here we are talking at each other.
So say hello to the people, Ethan.
Hi. Hello, people in the future.
I don't think we've ever asked you, but do you generally just go by Ethan, or certainly the Eef seems to be the thing to do, perhaps?
Eef is a nickname that I got from when I was in a rock band. Our drummer started calling me that, and it became pretty much the name I was known by everybody. And then when my comic book career kind of took off and my rock career did not, I switched back to Ethan Nicole because it's a more unique name that I can Google much easier and see.
Right.
My comics and insulting me and stuff. So
when someone refers to you as the Eef, does it like bring like feelings of shame? Regret?
No, generally people that have known me a while call me Eef. People still catch on. The nickname's still floating around in places. I generally refer to myself as Ethan now if I introduce myself.
Yeah.
But I don't really care which I'm called.
Sure.
Eef. You know, it rhymes with beef.
I'm gonna call you Thin for the rest of this interview.
Thin.
Yeah. Thin. Well, just that's the neglect.
I was gonna say that much.
It's the neglected half of your name.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say we've been talking for like 5 minutes. We haven't really told anyone who you are.
Oh,
we're talking to our pal Ethan.
They're all gonna know in the future, right?
This is true.
They already know.
The other option is we may wait and keep this in the vault and in case you die a spectacular death.
Not that we've arranged it already.
Yeah.
Not that we've arranged it.
If you ride on a rocket ship that flies into a cliff or something,
mm-hmm.
then this is totally we're making all our money off of selling the rights to this podcast. Nonetheless, Ethan is best known to us and to those fans of ours who've heard us talk about his work and tweet and about his work and such as the co-creator of the fabulous his phone's ringing. Who's was that, you, Storm?
Not
me.
We still don't know who Ethan is. Just keep going.
I know. I'm very troubled and I have to start over. He's known the co-creator of the fabulous web comic Axe Cop. We have featured. Yeah, finally got it out there. And don't worry, we're going to fix all this in post. So we're going to get that out within the first 20 seconds. But we have featured Axe Cop the motion comic videos of Axe Cop at several Woodstocks. We have gone on at length about it to our friends and on previous editions of this podcast. Right. And owing to our stalker nature, certainly my stalker nature, I I don't want to lump you in there, Storm, with the unpleasant aspects, because I'm usually the one who reaches too far beyond the velvet rope trying to meet people.
You're just more outgoing. My spirit is with it, especially with Axe Cop. The other part of this adventure is the other half of the co-creation is Ethan's brother Malachi, who when they started it he was 5 years old. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Well, let's let you let's get the boring questions out of the way. Ethan, why don't you give us sort of the 2 to 4 minute or shorter version of what the hell Axe Cop is and how it came about.
Axe Cop is. I should have this canned.
You really should. Yes. Yeah.
I've done it so many times. Axe Cop is a comic that I created with my 5-year-old brother about a cop with an axe. He was just playing one day, and he said, "Want to play Axe Cop?" And I said, "Yes, I do."
That's the proper
I immediately got this image in my head of this cop with an axe. Just this, it's one of those characters that creates itself. You don't have to do any concept work. Just the moment he said it, this character was in my head, and I had to draw him. Uh-huh. And it was his logic was mainly that he had a toy axe and he didn't want to fight fires, because how do you even fight a fire with an axe? Like, when I was a kid, that didn't make any sense to me either.
No, it doesn't.
It seemed like an awesome weapon. And I think that Axe Cop embodies that whole idea that kids aren't stupid. Like, when you show them a cartoon and the character has a sword and he's slapping people with it, you know, because you don't want to cut anybody in a cartoon.
Yeah.
A kid is just like, dude, just turn the sword and cut them in half. And that's Malachi, you know, and he's, even though if you actually saw somebody do that, he'd have nightmares forever. You know, Axe Cop is that 5-year-old kind of bucking it to the system of what they try to feed 5-year-olds with cartoons and being cute. And he's just like this crazy hero. He's a cop with an axe.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that's so charming about it is you're a real artist. And, you know, I mean that in the sense of if we've looked through the other art that you've done, and you could be drawing, you know, the X-Men series. Your level of art is that high. And then to see that level of art framed this way, where you have all the conventions of being 5-year-old and playing in the backyard, like people always wanting to join other people's teams, mm-hmm. and no girls allowed.
And rules are arbitrarily written and rewritten and ignored according to whim. And in case we haven't made it clear, Malachi writes the comic.
Yeah, it's his story.
And how many, well, as of this recording, how many episodes or issues have there been of just the comic itself?
I think we're in the 80s. It's like, it's kind of like a page an episode, just about. But yeah, so we're at 82. So that's give or take pages. But then also Ask Axe Cop, we do the section where people send in questions for Axe Cop and Malik answers them. And I just posted the 52nd one of those today. So we have a graphic novel out through Dark Horse that the first printing sold out in a month. So actually the second printing hits shelves on the 2nd of March.
Nice.
And
as the case may be, hit the stores way back in March of 2011.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It'll be like on its 600th printing, and Malachi will be 70 by the time this is out.
Living in his golden house.
Yeah.
It's just, if you have not read Axe Cop, first of all, what the hell, go read some. But if you haven't, it's pretty much, as you can picture, the way we've been describing it, the series just has this beautiful stream of consciousness, anything goes quality to it that you can't fake, that you get from when a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old, when you tell them, you know, tell me a story about what Axe Cop's going to do next, and this stuff just flows out of him, and you illustrate it, and it's something I don't know if you can't fake it, but it would be very, very difficult, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I'm really drawn to, and I want to ask some questions about where this comes from inside of you, but you match this great artwork with this twisted sense of humor and just the right amount of grotesqueness, you know, and that I was growing up and grew up in the 70s and 80s, used to love like Cracked Magazine and Mad Magazine. And one of the great things when you open that was it was so rich and they put all these little jokes in. There was the obvious joke, but then there'd be something happening in the background. It was just a throwaway thing. And I feel like when I look at X-Cop panels, that you're doing the same thing, like adding to the humor of the situation in this often deadpan way. Is that something that just comes naturally, like when you're writing with Malachi? Are these images popping into your head, or is it like when you get down to write the panel that it just starts to blossom in your head that way?
It does depend on the story, but I mean, the way that things go with Malachi, he never gives me the story in order, you know. It's all me, like, you know, the reason Ask X-Cop works is because Ask X-Cop is really what I'm doing when I create a story with Malachi. I'm just asking him all the questions that need to be answered to make the story complete. And so once I think I have all those answers, which I usually don't, so then I have to call him back and try to fill the gaps in, and then he branches the story off in a million different directions again. And also a lot of times he'll repeat part of the story in a different way. And a lot of times he gives me different options, like a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Or, and sometimes, see, the thing about X-Cop is that it's my job to make it interesting and entertaining to read. It's not his job, even though I can blame him if it's not, but I mean, right. If nobody wants to read it, then I'm out of a job. But I have to keep the integrity of it by it all being from him, so I'm in this interesting position of where I have to work only with what he's given me, but I have to have a punchline, I have to have a story, it has to be entertaining. And so I don't know, it's a really interesting process. I'm not complaining as much as just saying that I have this crazy job. It's really fun. And I think the greatest example of it is the series we have coming out in March, which will have already come out long ago when you guys hear this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
called Bad Guy Earth. It's probably won the Best Book on Earth award many times over by now. But
yeah, even here on Good Guy Earth.
That's right. So yes, it's a 3-part miniseries. I went up and spent an entire month with Malachi in person, playing with him, and we wrote this full story that's kind of feature length. It's crazy. And I, you know, so instead of taking a bunch of notes to write a few pages, I took tons of notes and wrote, you know, it's about 75 pages of comic book material.
Uh-huh.
With a full beginning, middle, and end. And it's just insanely epic. Like, wow. The best way I can describe it is like, cut out half of C.S. Lewis's brain when he's working on Narnia, and then put Michael Bay's brain, like half his, in there, and like let him get, and then just like make him drink a bunch of Red Bulls, and then just let him get going.
That's two great tastes that taste great together, right?
Yeah.
There.
Well, put me down for one of those for sure.
Yeah, I think everyone who I've shown it to so far has said it's like the next level of X-Cop, because it's just. I get to put more work into it. It's full color. The art, I've really put my just as worked as hard as I can on it. And plus, it's just when you let Malachi go that far without stopping him, it's just crazy what it is. And also, this one we wrote playing. So, like, we played with toys. A lot of X-Cop is written over the phone just talking, but this one we actually played running around the house with fake guns, getting my car, pretending to be in a car chase. The toy dinosaurs and aliens and robots, and like, so it's just like this massive Armageddon armies fighting, just crazy worlds being destroyed. It's just so much fun.
So he's just as enthusiastic now as he ever has been then, it sounds like, about just, or is it just like he's playing with his brother? Is that
kind it's of... just yeah it really is just playtime. Like he might be not in the mood to do X-Cop one day and we might do something else. He just likes to play, so
yeah.
Or he might not want to play. He really likes to play video games, so I have to get him interested in, like, my job. It's funny. I have to like beg him to play sometimes. Can we just play? Let's play toys, not video games. A lot of it's bartering. Like I'll say, well, if we play Axe Cop for a while, then you can play with my iPad. And once we're actually playing, then all of a sudden he loves it.
I was going to ask if it's sort of if to any degree it's changed your relationship with him for good or for ill. Sort of pre-Axe Cop and post-Axe Cop, like they're for like I'm thinking sort of like a comedian, like a stand-up comedian often sort of has a certain distance from life, like they're always looking for material.
Yeah.
And they always sort of, you know, even just interacting with, in everyday life or with friends or what have you, there's always one eye sort of looking for fodder for the next thing. Is there any element of that with your interactions with Malachi at this point? Or do you try and sort of keep it compartmentalized as much as you can? Or
well, I try. You know, it's funny because we built up a lot of material, so I haven't had to call him and talk to him about it, but more than a couple times a month lately. So, I don't know. I try to call and not even bring Axe Cop up sometimes, you know, every once in a while. And
yeah,
but yeah, I mean, for sure, it's such a weird, unique situation to be in. And when you guys were kind of introducing, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, when I first made the first Axe Cop strips, the reason it never entered my mind as a possibility that it would be successful, because I just didn't think it could ever work to make a comic. Yeah. Written by a 5-year-old, you can't, you know, they're totally undependable. And also, I think people say they're skeptical when they hear the premise that Axe Cop's written by a 5-year-old. And I think I'd be the biggest skeptic about that. Like, that just seems like an idea that would never work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would get annoying or repetitive. And I've been so fascinated to see how it continually develops and the characters develop as Malachi is growing up so rapidly.
Well, it's terrific.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, it is terrific that the characters, you know, they do recur. It's not like, and I don't think just any 5 or any 6-year-old could do this, to weave these characters together into this universe with your help, certainly, in fleshing them out and bringing them to life on the page.
Yeah, at this point, 1 year into it, how many characters have appeared in Axe Cop at this point? I thought you said it was like 128 or something like that.
Well, I recently did a print, which will have long sold out when people listen to the podcast. But there's still some left in the store at this moment where I drew every single character from the first year. There's 300 available, and there's some still available in there. It's a 2-color screen print. It's worked like a week on it, but it has it was like 128 or 127 or something. It was a lot, and that was just from the first year. That doesn't include ones that have come out since, or all the new ones that are going to be in Bad Guy Earth. So every year I think I'm going to do a print of all the new characters that year.
It's actually quite struck. I went and looked at, you have your art blog on your site, and it's like this seismic shift. And it's really charming that before that you had, you know, you would be doing nudes, you know, as you would to study art or just sketching. And we'll also bring up, you were nominated for an Eisner Award for your comic Chumblespuzz.
Yeah.
So you had a lot going. And then you see this first Axe Cop, you describe it as, hey, here's this crazy thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, boom, the whole picture changes. Where were you before Axe Cop sort of took over your life?
I had been laboring over my next graphic novel. I really wanted to put a graphic novel out that, but still about as insane as, you know, something like I would make, you know. So I've been working on a story called Bearmageddon.
Yeah.
Which by the time people be an amazing movie that's already been made. right now, it's just a graphic novel that I have about 30 pages of drawn in a script. But that Christmas visit, when I was at my family's, I had finished the script and I was getting ready. I had made it my goal to start drawing it on January 1st, that new year. And I wanted to release it as a webcomic because in the world of comics, especially for it's not an X-Men comic or something, you don't make money with print comics, really. I mean, not enough people buy them. If you're doing like a comic for like SFP or one of these smaller publishers, they're just barely getting by on the sales that your books are doing, and so they can hardly afford to give you much of any money.
And hardly anybody's walking into a comic shop to buy something new. You know, they're all buying stuff they've been buying their whole life.
Right.
But you know what? If I'm not going to make any money, I'm just going to throw my comic up online for free, because that way people will share it if they like it. And maybe people that don't read comics will check it out. And maybe I'll actually get an audience. And also, comic on the shelf, you know, the day it comes out, you get about a couple weeks to a month of promotional time where people want to do interviews. Or they want to write reviews about your work, and then it just kind of fades off into the ether. You're doing a webcomic, you know, as long as that thing's moving and that organism is growing, that webcomic is still going. People want to review, they want to interview, people share, so it stays alive. And so I just kind of become interested in the experiment of doing a webcomic, even though I didn't really read them. And so over Christmas, I goofed off doing Axe Cop because I was so worn out working on my project, Bearmageddon, which is a fun project. It's like a horror comedy, kind of like Shaun of the Dead with bears, you know, epic story. And I was all ready to go. So I had these four Axe Cop pages. When I got home, I started working on Bearmageddon. But I had talked to him and said, well, I don't want to just throw Bearmageddon up as a website because I'm afraid that the functionality, you know, I want to learn the ropes of a webcomic first and, like, work the kinks out. So let's just throw these Axe Cop pages up and do an Axe Cop. You know, no one's really going to, you know, just friends and family are going to come because it's just something me and my little brother made. No one's going to really be that into it. And 2 days later was when I went viral, and it just, my life hasn't been the same since.
Now, you sort of did stumble upon the home run ball, but at the time, like for a comic artist, What is really the path, the goal for you before Axe Cop just took on a life of its own? What was your aim, or did you not know? Was it just a matter of producing what you think is good and hope that something finds you?
I think my main goal has been to be a creator, as far as, and you know, it's a tough position to get into, but you know, we're actually making intellectual properties that people want to spend money on. Either toys or movies or whatever, TV shows. I had a TV, a pilot for a series at Cartoon Network that got optioned and kind of fell apart. Which is kind of normal, but
sure.
You know, kind of stuff like that. Like I had that before Axe Cop. So I've been kind of working, you know, that was one of the reasons I moved down to LA, was because those opportunities started to open up for me.
I was going to ask,
Like I had been kind of climbing that ladder slowly of the industry, and I'd kind of, I was doing okay. Axe Cop just happened out of nowhere, and the funny thing is that besides the skill, I think, that I built up in my art, other than that, I don't think any of that other climbing had anything to do with it. Like, it just happened to... That's what's so weird. You know, it had nothing to do with any of the great publishers that I'd become friends with, or, you know, or it had nothing to do with my friends who were high up in the industry. Literally, just, I threw it on the internet, and it just caught on fire.
So have you found that because you had made those connections that suddenly all these people that were saying maybe suddenly have ideas, or that it's been easier to make things happen?
It's definitely helpful. Like when I go in for meetings at like networks or whatever, a lot of people know who I am now.
Yeah.
It's weird to have a known name, or at least like if they don't know my name, I say Axe Cop and they all know about that.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I mean, I can't complain. I don't know. It is interesting to experience it from this position, because you envision like I'll get messages and comments from people on the internet saying how, oh, it's so stupid that this guy and his five-year-old brother are all rich now because they're doing this. I'm like, we're not rich, my friend. We're not poor, you know, but it's like...
By the time we hear this podcast, you will, of course, be stinking rich.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that giant statue people will be sick of looking at.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to erect a 20-foot statue of Axe Cop at the in front of LAX.
Golden, pure gold.
I was gonna ask something. Boy, it would be great if I could remember what it was.
I have something. If you
go ahead, because I have lost my mojo.
Sure. So, when you were growing up, were there other people in your family that did art? Was it a very funny atmosphere? what was it like? What drew you to art, or was it just something that you always did?
The only art in my family was that my grandfather on my mom's side and my grandmother on my dad's side both were kind of into painting, like landscapes and stuff. But there's never any cartooning or illustration. I didn't grow up around it, but it's something I always loved to do. I don't remember starting. I've always loved drawing cartoons. I've always loved working humor into my art. You mentioned earlier that my crude, some of the kind of crude humor, the gross humor, and and the way I try to work jokes into the backgrounds and all that kind of stuff.
Were there
any? Definitely something I grew up doing, and I was really into. I was really into Far Side growing up.
Yeah. So.
I tend to look at each panel as a joke in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Some ways, I have to kind of pull myself away from that to some extent. But especially if you've read my Chumbles Fuzz stuff, especially the first volume, I tried to cram a joke into every panel in that thing.
Yeah.
And but you also see how unharnessed I am. I do lean more towards gross. And one thing I've loved about Axe Cop is that it's kept me from getting to go all the way out there and push boundaries as much, because my 5-year-old brother's watching me, you know.
Yeah.
and it has to all come from him, and so and even when he says something really gross, I have to make it appropriate for his eyes. So, so I kind of like it though. Like, a lot of artists complain about being held back, but I think that a lot of times artists do some of their best work when they're held back, because they have to think about it harder.
Yeah, it forces you to create around maybe not what would be where you would immediately run to, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. And I would one other thing about growing up is I'd say my family does, the unique thing about my family is we're all very weird, like very weird sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of jokes and laughing, and so for sure, like if you've ever seen anything, like my pictures on my Facebook page, there's a picture, like a formal image of us that we took like at Walmart, but we're all making these retarded faces.
So
I just grew up with great senses of humor around me.
So Axe Cop really is an extension of your family's personality then, in some ways.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy, yeah.
How involved is Malachi sort of after the writing process? How much does he pay attention to what's going on? Like, I assume, of course, he reads it when it comes out and such, but how much does he care, or does it just sort of, oh yeah, there's my Axe Cop comic, and he goes and turns around and plays more Xbox or something? Or like, is he in on pitch meetings, or
no.
analyzing the portfolio and recommending stocks and things like that?
Yeah, right. Well, in general, I question him, write my notes, and then I take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reads the comic. Sometimes he'll tell me I got something wrong. usually it doesn't make any sense. Sometimes it makes way better sense once he explains it. I'm like, oh. Some of those things, like, there's one significant one, like when Axe Cop and Flute Cop are little kids and they bonk their heads into each other and they forget
yes
who each other is.
Uh-huh.
Well, he said, no, they're supposed to do that when they're adults. And it actually, if you look at other, there's plot holes where it doesn't make sense that they don't know each other throughout their childhood. But everything would make sense if they bonk their heads when they're adults. So it actually, like, he was thinking about on that one. So I need to work that into a later episode that, you know, Axe Cop got his own story wrong in episode 0.
Retcon.
Yeah. But there's something else I'm going to say. What was the question again?
Just how involved Malachi is and sort of how aware of sort of Axe Cop's
I think
reach.
Sometimes. Yeah, when he reads a new episode, like when I get to watch him sit there and read a new episode, to some extent, like he forgets over half of what he said to me.
Huh.
So, and also, like, he hasn't seen it in order. He doesn't really realize how awesome an idea he had was until, you know, you draw it out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you kind of see him light up a lot of times. Like, you see him, like, get through it, and he's like, you can see he's kind of blown away by his own idea. And you can see then he kind of, like he kind of sits there. He takes it in, then he kind of, like, gets real proud and goes, oh, yeah, I made that.
Now, I heard.
I've worked my butt off to make it really fun and exciting, and it's just so funny to see him, you know, you can see he's like, he just doesn't realize that that's what we just came up with, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And he does not consider himself to be a nerd. That is that correct?
No. He's very actually, what's funny, we MTV Geek did like a 10 reasons you should buy the Acocot book article.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was really offended that they used the word geek. I go, look, MTV Geek, he doesn't even know what MTV is. Who cares? He goes, geek. And he was just mad.
I guess at that age, it's not yet a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't read a lot of comics either. His favorite comic is actually Little Lulu, I think, which is a comic that Dark Horse gave us.
Nobody's favorite is Little Lulu. Come on.
He loves it. Really weird. Like I didn't think that he'd like it, but we actually have a lot of fun reading when I'm up there.
I was going to ask, has he ever been to any cons with you? But then I sort of ask the sub question. I mean, we met the first time we met you in person, I think, was at San Diego Comic-Con. It might have been earlier than that, but we saw you. You had a booth at San Diego Comic-Con. But have you had any sort of panels at other cons? And has he been involved in any of that at any point, or is that all on you? I'd be interested in seeing sort of a 6-year-old's perspective on Emerald City Comic Con or something.
Well, our first Comic Con together will be Emerald City. We've both been invited as special guests, so I think we're going to be on the Dark Horse panel. I think that's the plan. We did do that event we did at Meltdown Comics in LA recently.
Yeah.
There's like 150 people there, and we did a full-on panel with videos and a guy, MC, my two buddies that do the Acocot podcast, MC'd it, and Malachi was just going crazy. It was a really fun, I mean, as far as panels go, I mean, I've been to a lot of them. I think it was one of the coolest ones I've ever been to, even though say that being a part of it, but it was awesome.
he enjoys the spotlight. Oh,
yeah, he hams it up. He gets crazy.
Now, you've mentioned some of the other projects that you have done and plan to do, and obviously you've got your hands pretty full with Acocot, but mm-hmm. in your mind, like now that you've had a big jump in success, when you kind of look at the million-mile horizon, is there like a dream project for you that may have been crazy at one point to even think would be possible that would be something for you to aim for?
No, I always have a ton of different projects in my head that I'd like to do, and I kind of just make it a goal to always be working on the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just be the one trick guy that just does Acocot mm-hmm. for the rest of my life. So I actually like have about 3 pages left of Bad Guy Earth to draw, and I'm gonna.
Plus, it would be a little less of a hook if you know, 20 years from now, Acocot,
yeah, exactly.
written by a 27-year-old,
yeah,
drawn by his 54-year-old brother,
yeah,
loses a little something.
It does, yeah. Over time, it doesn't age well.
Like Acocot is worried because he hasn't really started his retirement plan yet.
Yeah.
Just
so I'm interested to see him like going through like the when he's turning into a teenager. I want to know if we get like emo Acocot or anything.
Of course, everybody is listening to this in that future, and we've
so we'll see what happened.
Released it because you have been elected president of left Earth.
Is there a are there any particular favorite characters that you really enjoy drawing and like get excited when he brings them up again?
I think the funnest ones for me have been when he just says something insane and I have to figure out how to draw it. That's the kind of like the vampire man baby kid. He very specifically said it's a vampire on like the left side. It's a vampire man on like one side. Vampire baby on the other side and a vampire kid right in the middle, like, and it's vertically. He was very specific, like he was giving me hand motions where it sections off, and so it was just such an awkward thing to have a man full man-sized body parts on one side and baby-sized body parts on the other.
And then you solved it also by giving him sort of a vagina in the middle of his face.
Yeah.
That's a lot funnier if you're looking at the picture of the vampire man baby kid.
Yeah. Yeah, his mouth kind of strokes off like a person with a stroke. Like every time. Yeah.
Now it's been almost exactly a year since it all started happening with Axe Cop.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, interacting with the fan base has been a big part of it. You know, people coming to get their fix, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of activity on the boards. At this point, do you feel like you've sort of you've found your groove with the fan base? Is it still weird to you sometimes?
So far, you know, I think I've got friends that have been successful, and a lot of them seem to have weirder fans than I've had. But I think that so far, Axe Cop hasn't attracted real weirdos, which you think, you know, with the whole little kid thing,
yeah,
there might be some real weirdos that would show up, but so far, they haven't really. There's, you know, you get some of your average weird kind of con geek guys
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, kind of stare awkwardly, and, you know, they're weird. But, like, other than that,
and I
don't know, in general, people have been pretty cool, and no real psychos, yeah.
And do you feel like it has attracted a large number of people who might not be typical comic book type people?
Yeah, I think it has. I saw a tweet by a professional writer the other day on Twitter, and he said twice in the last day I've had two people ask me about Axe Cop, and they aren't people who read comics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was also Kevin Murphy said that Axe Cop was the first comic he's read cover to cover. He did the forward for my book.
Yeah. You mean all of our mutual friend and close personal friend Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science
exactly.
Theater?
Kevin Murphy. Yes.
What's
I think it's your fault that we got in touch. Is it?
It might be.
We'll take credit for it, certainly. Yeah, I remember credit, yeah. I don't remember exactly when it was. I know it was very early on in the Axe Cop lifetime that we found out about you. I'm sure somebody tweeted about it or something like that when we found out about it, and we immediately started retweeting.
Yeah.
Because we thought mm-hmm. it was awesome. I wouldn't be surprised if he found out about it. But then now that I think back on it, I think we had a show a couple months into your run. We had a show in Los Angeles and actually physically met yes. you in person. And yeah, I recall yeah. like I don't want to say any names necessarily unless you're able to, but I remember even then, just a couple months in, you know, we met you after the show and we're just chatting. You're like, yeah, I've got meetings the rest of the week with X, Y, and Z. And X, Y, and Z were like names that most people out there, even non-Hollywood types, would know
or own chairs in, you know.
Yeah. And so that what I was going to ask, like, what's some of the sort of more ridiculous, I can't believe this is actually happening types of meetings or pitches you've gotten just over the course of a year of doing this? I'm curious. Drop some names or you know, at least give initials or something.
One of the cooler ones has been, you know, when this first started happening, I started getting phone calls from these guys claiming that they were the guys that discovered the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted to be my licensing agents, and they were from New York, and all my friends, like Doug Tenapel is a good friend of mine, the creator of Earthworm Jim, he kept telling me, watch out for these guys from New York, they're all sharks, and they all say that they discovered Ninja Turtles, and watch out for them. So apparently that's like a big thing for New York guys, and they're, you know, they're all. So anyway, these guys are very persistent. Like, they even went so far as to fly out and meet with me and wow. From New York.
Wow.
And we thought they were crazy. So I already had management before Axe Cop happened because in the Cartoon Network thing, so with the Gotham group.
Mm-hmm.
So we met with them, and my guys checked them out, did like a background check, you know, asked around the industry who these guys are. Turns out they really were the guys. Like, Mark Friedman is really the guy that walked into a comic shop and saw this black and white comic called Ninja Turtles. And he was the guy who did all that licensing, kept the Ninja Turtles rights belonging to Eastman and Laird the entire time. And, you know, Turtles, you know, made $1 billion. So it's insane. But and the thing is, these guys are, they've actually been great. They're amazing at what they do. And they love Axe Cop. Like, they've just been, like, they know it mm-hmm. by heart. So that's when you know, like, when you meet people in this industry that really love it. Trying to think what else. What should I say?
Well, let me ask this. I would love to see it. And who knows? You don't. If there's secret talks going on, don't, you know, spoil it. But if there were a live action ex-cop movie with like a $200 million budget.
Which it would need, yeah.
Yeah, it would, and it would be incredible.
Wait, wasn't Avatar $400 million? I think it'd need more than Avatar.
Could be. But if I had $400 million, I would put it behind your project. Who would you cast like to see as Axe Cop?
That's the big question. I mean,
let's make it a two-parter. If it was a live-action version, who would you cast? And if it was just animated, who would you cast for the voice?
Oh.
Does it change it up?
Yeah, I've kind of grown attached to the voice that we've got for Axe Cop.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
A friend of my friend Dave.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
Does Dave look anything like Axe Cop?
Dave looks like if Axe Cop, he has the mustache, but other than that, he just kind of, he actually looks like a rotund Storm.
The Storm from 2 years ago.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Noah's last name's Ham. The guy that's on Mad Men.
Oh, John Ham.
Oh, John Ham.
John Hamm, I think he'd be a pretty awesome Axe Cop.
He'd be a sexy Axe Cop.
Yeah, because he has the jaw. I mean, I kind of feel like Axe Cop, it might be better to have someone who's not a known actor to play him. Because, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Maybe give other characters those roles. Because I like the idea of picking really serious actors like Philip Seymour Hoffman as Flute Cop.
Well, I could see Timothy Oliphant as Axe Cop. He was in Deadwood. He was the sheriff in that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and he's on Justified.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, Kevin Murphy as Bad Santa.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities. Because, you know, there's so the possible Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, yeah. He did leap to mind up there as well. You'd certainly have the right vibe for it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a place where you would draw the line, like say Axe Cop, you know, lunchboxes or Axe Cop action figures or you know, learn the ABCs with Axe Cop? Like, is there a point at which you think it will be too much, or are you like fine with whatever anybody's willing to pitch you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Alternately, has that already been pitched to you? It's like the stupidest idea you've ever heard.
Some of the movie ideas people had when I first, and just to answer your question, this, there isn't anything official happening movie wise. There's been lots of talk. There's lots of interest. A funny thing is, actually, can I say this? I guess, whatever. This is going to be the future.
It's the future.
Everything's
fair in the future.
Because you guys know I'm published by Dark Horse. Well, we had a meeting with Mike Richardson recently. This is the president of Dark Horse.
Wow.
And the meeting, film possibilities, just talking.
Mm-hmm.
But Malachi was in town that day with me and my dad, and him came down. And it was the first day that they'd ever visited. They just got off the plane, and these guys wanted to have a meeting with me. And I said, well, my family didn't visit me very. This is my first time visiting here. I paid for their plane ticket. They're going to have just got the plane. I really want to be with them. Can we reschedule or can they come? And they said, all right, they can come. Malachi's sitting across the table from Mike Richardson, who's the president of Dark Horse, and he's playing my iPad, just hunched back in his chair, swinging his legs frantically, and repeatedly kicking Mike Richardson in the knees to the point that Mike has to like plead with my dad to get him to stop.
he thought it was just a strong arm negotiating tactic.
Yeah.
Like, who's this little shark this guy's brought with him?
Yeah. Just kicking him. He's like, he's kicking me really hard.
He was reinterpreting.
The cool thing is what's that?
Oh, he was reinterpreting that scene from The Social Network when they go to talk to the money people.
Luckily, that Mike Richardson has a good sense of humor. He's a pretty good guy. And I'd met him before, so I had a feeling. But
When you met him, did you kick him in the knees repeatedly?
Yeah.
It's a Dark Horse thing. Yeah.
The Russian dance, yeah.
Well, before we let you go, is there any last thing that you would like to to pitch or shill, or you feel that did you want to talk more about your rock band Lunar Active? I know that.
No. Yeah, I was going to ask, is the music available anywhere?
Yeah, is that available?
Or will Lunar Active do the soundtrack to the eventual Axe Cop film?
I don't think so. I'm done rocking. I do want to do a band. I would love to be in a band again. I miss it because I love singing, I love playing guitar. I love writing, but you know, my taste had like long changed. We started the band when I was like 19, and I'm like 27, and just not even into the style at that point. I'm pretty sure I gave you guys our CD when I was at Comic-Con.
Oh, you know what you probably did, but so many people gave us stuff at Comic-Con.
Yeah, Comic-Con was a bad time.
It's probably still sitting in that bag somewhere.
Yeah. I wasn't giving it to you to pitch the band to you to try to get famous.
Right. can we open for you guys?
Yeah.
That's true. You know what? And we do owe you one because you wrote us into an X-Cop episode.
That's right. Yeah.
Which was like one of I was seriously more excited about that than just about anything else that happened last year.
Pretty much.
we're sort of in the background of one episode on a billboard somewhere.
Yeah. You're on the one of the only splash. It might be the only splash page in that book. Oh no, it's one of like two or three. When
right.
The big egg is taking over the city.
Yes.
And in fact, we do owe you a song, and we will make good on that.
Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, because you're asking me what next Axe Cop project I'd like to see, I was going to say a Pollen Storm Axe Cop concept.
Ah.
Absolutely. We will.
You know what?
When we're done with this interview, we'll do a little more talking, actually, and see if we can nail this.
That's right. But only if you bring your brother to kick Storm in the knees while we discuss terms.
Yeah. I do my best work when I'm being kicked in the knees.
Yeah. He's good at it.
That was the one last thing I wanted to ask you about, because it's something we have seen previously a little bit with us, and certainly with Jonathan Colton. Have you been getting a lot of sort of fan generated content back at you, like people redrawing Axe Cop or making Axe Cop songs, or you know, were you a part of that whole the motion comic video, or is that something somebody just did?
Yeah, that's been huge. Like a lot of that, like the Axe Cop theme song that you guys hear in the motion comics. Those guys just emailed me. This band called Stepdad. This email band said we wrote the song for Axe Cop. You have it and use it for whatever you want. It's so awesome. Everybody loves it.
Yeah.
And motion comics. A kid made a motion comic that wasn't very good. Even the idea.
Uh-oh. Hope he's not listening.
Awesome. Yeah.
What's his name? Storm?
I actually sent him an email after we made our really good motion comic. I sent him an email like saying, "I'm sorry, I'm not trying to step on your motion comic. I just want you know you gave me the idea to do this." But basically, after I saw it, I was like, I posted a post like, "Hey, who wants to work on making Axe Cop motion comics with me just for the fun of it?" And I got all these replies. So everybody works on them, does it for free and just for fun. Yeah, those have been awesome. People posting all sorts of weird videos online. The coolest one was guys in Australia that made a live action Axe Cop episode 1.
Oh yes, saw that.
Yeah, that was. People say they're working on.
We'll post a link to that on the listing of this, which you'll have seen already. So I don't know why I'm telling you about it.
People who are listening. Episode.
I'm really saying it just to remind myself to do it whenever we actually post this thing. That we'll post a link to a couple of these things.
And
it's pretty awesome.
So certainly be sure to check out Axe Cop if you have not already. Save up your nickels and dimes. We may put together the $500 million fund to make the Axe Cop movie happen.
Yeah, I think we could totally start to get a Kickstarter thing going for this. So we can totally self fund.
Goal.
We know some people in Los Angeles.
So
goal, $500 million. There you go.
Yeah. We're just $499,997,000 away from our goal.
But we've got you on the right path for it, at least.
That's right.
Make it rain $1 at a time. So thank you, Ethan, for spending this time with us. And I feel like we knew you, but now we know you. So that's
yeah. This is the longest conversation we ever had.
Yeah, it seriously is, and we're not even in the same room.
Yeah. Go figure. Do you have any stuff to appearances or anything to plug? And that may or may not be relevant, depending on how far in the future we air this.
Well, people of the future will know that I was at Seattle Emerald City Comic Con. They will also know that I was at Wizard World Anaheim in April and at San Diego Comic Con in July.
All right. Oh, well, we may be at San Diego Comic Con ourselves.
Do you have a panel or are you just doing a booth?
Don't know yet. I'm trying to get a panel.
Okay. Well, maybe we can join forces. It can be an Axe Cop / Paul and Storm panel, because that's such an obvious combination.
Oh, totally.
We can use some of the movie fund to rent a space or something.
That's right.
Yeah,
to bribe the programmers.
Well, if there's nothing else, then I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And that's Ethan. And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, we're going to need to hold more tryouts.
Go do things.